Selleck, the community house operations manager, about the $150,000 bridge loan granted CCH's board, Community Citizens Committee for the Homeless, for this community house project, which has now been delayed into the fall. $150,000 loan, and this is what he said. I'm concerned that any amount of money given to this project when there is no money going to the campground and lots of money going to enforcing the camping ban and the sleeping ban and the essentially ban on homeless people being able to exist normally in our community, that ain't good. I'm looking for alternatives, and I don't think we should be supporting Cadillac projects. What we need are some basics.
Well, thank you.
So, is this an official notification?
certainly. It's a strange way to do it, but, yeah. You know, me and my brownie, you know.
Yeah. Well, no, anyway, yeah.
Well, what about this $150,000?
What I understood is it was a bridge loan, a short-term loan,
right,
to allow us to put it towards construction with the assumption that we would get an equal amount from HUD,
right,
and that they finish their process and so forth around September, I believe, or possibly even October, and that at that point we would simply pay the city back.
Okay.
And so all it was a short-term loan.
Okay.
So and that's what I understood we went to that meeting to do.
Well, I was pissed at the city council members because we would have opposed even a short-term loan for CCH unless they dealt with the several issues, one being the campground situation.
What do they need to do? What needs to happen with that?
Well,
what do you want?
Okay, I would like them to seriously consider the prospect of allowing someone else to run a campground on that property immediately until such time as Community House actually begins construction. I think that by not doing so, they are showing a flagrant disregard for the needs of homeless people in Santa Cruz. I mean, they just are. And for them to run around fundraising on the backs of the homeless for their own little pet projects while they're keeping this property locked off, which is a disgrace.
I mean, what does that mean, fundraising on the backs of the homeless?
We are the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Help the homeless. Give us hundreds of thousands of dollars. Okay. Give us the preferential treatments and loans and waivers.
Yeah.
That's what I call fundraising on the backs of the homeless. Using the word.
Is that different than anybody else fundraises?
They're the ones who do it the most. And they're the ones who get away with it the most.
United Way doesn't do it, and Red Cross doesn't do it.
They do, but United Way and Red Cross don't pretend to provide emergency services here in Santa Cruz.
So it's because it's in Santa Cruz that you're upset so much. I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out what's different.
Well, the difference
every nonprofit that I know of does what you said is terrible. And I'm trying to think to myself,
every nonprofit that I know of has not lied to the homeless and sold them out recently, like CCH has. That's the problem I have with CCH. I'm concerned that before the city starts funding this gang,
funding what?
This group of individuals.
CCH?
Yes.
Oh, we're the gang?
Before the city continues funding this group of distinguished individuals who are raising money on behalf of the homeless...
I didn't know what gang you were talking about at all.
Right?
I thought maybe somebody moved in. I didn't know about it. Give me a break.
Well, of course.
You're
new on the block.
Jeez.
Coming from Russia, I thought you were familiar with the gang situation.
Well, I am. That's why I was getting concerned. Because the gangs in Russia are serious.
Right. Well, here they have...
Okay, I got you.
$11 million.
I'm not used to your slang, sorry.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
Well,
I got what gang is now. Okay, go ahead.
This is that gang of fun-loving patriarchs.
Got you.
CCH.
Got you.
Yeah.
That the board?
The board.
And the staff?
Well, I mean, I'm talking mainly about the people with positions of power. I'm talking about Darling Lee and until he left Meursault. And I suppose there are a few other people who are influential. Alan Bayer. I mean, people who sort of run the...
Yes, and
me. I hate to criticize you because I don't know...
Oh, okay. I thought you were just identifying. I didn't know you were criticizing yet.
You are, perhaps a young innocent who has been lured into the thickets of this particular situation.
I appreciate that.
You and...
Here I am, well-meaning guy.
He's
he does. Here you can get some help from this expert person who knows the wiles.
Yes.
Of institutional scumbags who have been sucking the city dry for years. With $11 million in their back pocket at the same time, I might add.
Speaking of
Mr. Dr.
$11 million
Dr.
In their
Paul
back
Lee, a rather wealthy man, I understand.
personal. Has $1 million? $11 million in his pocket?
I'm told that he does. $13 million. I'm sorry, a big mistake.
I knew I worked for the right guy.
There you go. That's a few shekels.
Yeah, okay.
That's a little better. That's not relevant because he's acting as a private individual. But it does, to some extent, go to, anyway, so.
There's a pretty well-meaning character there who does a lot of work for a long time.
You talking about the janitor or
Mr. Lee?
Oh, Paul.
Who has spent, 11, 12 years?
Well, I've also spent a lot of time, and a lot of
I didn't say you weren't a good guy.
I've raised a lot of money and kicked a lot of homeless people off a lot of property, and I feel like there's a difference.
Have you housed several thousand?
Never.
Lately?
I haven't.
Oh, well, he has.
No, he has.
Have you served, 22,000 meals?
And you know how he's done that? Because we've been kicking his butt down the road for the last 8 years.
So you did do it.
Well,
he would have never done it without you.
I would say that there's some truth in that.
Wow, you are important then. Okay, good.
I would have to say that. Modest though I may
be. Modest though you may be, I am a good butt kicker, right?
I work at it.
I can tell.
It's such a big butt, it takes a long time to kick.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's easier to hit.
No. It's a big target, but it's...
That's it. You got to move it hard.
You got to keep doing it.
You're in the league.
I'm small but mighty. Big but impotent.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So again, the question I had for you was, this $150,000... talking to Frank Pislick and to...
Tatiana Moskvina.
And also the table is...
There's one that you can't pronounce. Becky Johnson.
And of course myself, Robert Norris. It's June 4th, 1996. We're at Eric's Deli chatting about CCH. And what I'm saying, Frank, is that on or off the record, that I was told by Daryl Darling at the last city council meeting that the budget, the operating budget, the scenarios for CCH's budget have not been made public, will not be given to me until such time as they are. And my thought was, if it takes 2 days to fix the fucking budget, then why are we waiting 3 weeks? I was wondering, how 2 days can suddenly be extended to 3 weeks. And now, of course, it's 4 weeks, and there is
no... It might be more.
Yeah, it might be more. And there are plans, there's no plans for CCH to show up at the next Social Services Subcommittee meeting.
And that I know of.
That you know of. And that I know of either. Or that Mike Rodkin knows of. Or that anybody knows of. Or that Becky, who's on the board of directors of CCH. On Tuesday at 8:15.
Oh, a week from today.
A week from today.
Okay, we might.
We might. Well, it'll have to be on the agenda.
My boss will tell me.
Right. So, and I've been told some off-the-record things by you, but one of the things I've told you that's on the record is, and that I've been told directly, is that Daryl Darling has said, you ain't getting no budget from me, buddy. And I said, fine, then I'll just have to assume you don't have no budget, that you're real willing to show to the public. I'm a critic, but I'm also a member of the public. And, it's obvious you are unwilling to show to the public.
Yeah, and well, this is a quote you're giving about your conversation with Daryl Darling.
With
right?
Daryl Darling, okay. It has nothing to do with you.
Okay.
Right. So what I'm pointing out is that that seems to be still the case because you haven't brought a budget with you, and I assume that friendly guy that you are, you might in fact have such a budget or speculations about it if you had not been constrained by those who, should we say, put out the paychecks and issue the orders for your particular job. That's just my guess. I'm not suggesting that anything like that is necessarily the case. Far from it. It's probably a mistake. You left that suitcase at home. I mean, that could be the case. In any case, so my brownie is eaten. I've got nothing more to play with here. Let me ask you this. Not after the brownie. You picked up that large pickle.
I'm afraid you will get the budget when it is given to everybody, right?
Yeah, well, I suspect that, let's put it this way, they can't help but give me the budget when it's given to everybody. Yeah.
So. Obviously, we've worked on the budgets, and obviously, we plan to do business accurately and appropriately as best we can.
Right.
And so, there are drafts and expectations and contracts still being finalized and so forth with funding sources and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us to release the budget at this time, it'd be premature.
Right, and you're reluctant, or let's put it this way, you may not be reluctant, but it may be that others are reluctant, as I say,
they may, one can never be sure without these people being present to make statements themselves. It may be true that they're reluctant to release these figures because they feel that a critic such as myself might distort and slander and terrify the funding sources, destroying a meaningful and effective homeless project for five people in the county, which is due to open in a gala festival.
What did you say, for five people?
Isn't that your low end? We're going to open it, we're going to start it with five people in October and November. Isn't that what I heard? Did I mishear that one?
No, that's basically true.
Right, so
it's a little bit...
$1.2 million project for five. It's pretty impressive that you would catalog a project for five people for $1.3 million.
I mean,
I'm impressed with that. In Santa Cruz, right. So, anyway, this is what they've always done in Santa Cruz, not CCH, but the city council. They'll throw huge amounts of money at these little teeny projects.
Yeah. If you're actually interested in that, the point of opening with five has nothing to do with money. It has for the benefit of the people in the program. And if we were... And we won't be spending the same amount of money with a small number of people in the program, but the point is, we want the program to work successfully as best we can.
Right.
And if you go any place in the country and test and check out good programs that work well, they started with a small number because the attitude and the atmosphere and the group that you start with becomes a kind of a leading group in that community.
Right.
And it really is a community, and it works best if it's a community.
Right.
Of people that care, of people that are working, of people that are doing something important and something valuable.
Uh-huh.
If you bring in 40 people all at one time,
right.
It takes anywhere from 3 to 5 years generally to create a program that's healthy or valuable or workable. Because the ethic of the street and the ethic of taking advantage of people and the ethic of surviving, which is really good when you're on your own by yourself, it protects you, does not allow a community to become a place of primary growth and safety and all the things that are helpful to produce the most change in a time.
This is your conviction.
I didn't know I was convicted of anything.
No, I'm the guy who's been convicted. You're the man.
Yeah, you're the one
that's
going
right.
to get
I'm the con. You're the... or who's doing the con? That's another question.
Yeah.
That's your experience with these projects.
I've worked in them before. I've consulted to them. I've looked into how to do the job the best I can. And, you know, my idea is that you go to where people do it successfully and find out what they do and how do they do it right and so forth. And their feedback has been, and my experience has been, that you don't open with 40. It doesn't make any sense, and you end up damaging people and spending more money damaging people than you would opening with 5, spending less money and doing a better job.
Right.
So it's not $1 million for 5 people. It's that the thought was for the benefit of the program, not because of the dollars of the program.
Uh-huh. Right. No, I'm saying initially it's a 1.3.
It's a true fact, but I mean you got to look at it and go, wait. What's this for, and does it make sense, and would we rather, you know, if you're trying to be penny wise, right, you would open with 40. But then you'd be coming to me a year from now and you'd be going, you opened with 40 and you're responsible for 3 people out there in the gutter. You should have known your
and
job.
So now you're
you
open
should
with,
have started
open
with 5
and you don't have to take any fucking responsibility for the 35 people that will be in the gutter throughout the year, right? I mean,
we start filling in quickly. Maybe we can matter
fill in
weeks
quickly.
Or
you're quick with your, it's pretty quick.
No, you don't have 5 for a year.
Right.
You have 5 for maybe 2 weeks or so, and the staff works intensively with those people. You get it established, you get a core, start moving in other people.
So by what time do you expect to be up to 40, let's say, in your projections?
Educated guess is somewhere between 7 and 9 months. It's a guess, but it's pretty educated.
Okay, so when do you expect to be up to 20?
Relatively half of that period of time.
Okay.
It grows pretty commonly after once you're started.
Okay.
And a lot of that depends upon about the first 10 people.
Uh-huh.
If they're real strong and they're real ready to go and ready to provide leadership to the next people coming in, we could get up to 40 within 5 or 6 months.
One of the criticisms of this program has been, why not just low-income housing? And initially, that's what Paige Smith initially wanted, I think, with this project.
Mm-hmm.
And why aren't you just going for low-income housing instead of all these, social service jobs, security shit?
All jobs. I wish I had some staff. I've got three
security workers. A lot of the money looks like it's going for people who are paid to run around and check to see if anybody's got drugs
on
their
person. Make up your mind. You said social service workers. You mean security or
both,
social workers? Which one you want?
Both. You need neither in low-income housing. You know, they're it's a large cost that I mean,
low-income housing have you been in lately that doesn't need security people?
I don't know that there are.
Anyway, go ahead.
Police department?
The police department is our local security person. Taxpayers pay for those. And this is Santa Cruz. This is not the big city, Frank. I mean, this is a little city, you know.
Go ahead.
I'm not aware that most.
Go ahead. Next point. You make your point. Next. Go ahead.
Yeah. So in other words, the question is why all the money for the security and social service personnel, mm-hmm. and why not just a low-income housing project? I know the answer to that, but
sure.
I'm wondering if you...
Your answer and I'll tell you if
my
I like
answer
it.
Is it's a nice way to get a lot of federal money and grants because that's where the bucks are right now.
No.
Is that wrong?
Yeah, it's wrong.
Okay, well then correct it for me.
Sure.
Show me I'm wrong.
There are programs available now that take people kind of and help them survive. Another day, another week, another something. It doesn't
housing programs.
There are lots of programs, emergency services, community mental health, health project, River Street Shelter, the Armory, ISSP.
I can go through each one of those and show you how none of those are low income housing.
No, I know.
No, none of those are low income housing.
You're not aware of all of the subsidized low-income housing there is right now?
I am aware there are some subsidized low-income
housing. There's 90 projects. I don't know the numbers for sure, but there's a lot.
You're estimating about 90 people here?
No, there's 90 for CMH alone. That's dual-diagnosed, homeless and or with mental needs of some kind.
Right.
90 alone,
right.
Provided by one program, Community Counseling Center. There are, I'm not even sure how many, what they call SR8 or SRO. I don't remember all this.
Section 8. Some of those, like for the low-income housing, it's a 9-year waiting list.
So?
Well, if you're still alive after 9 years,
okay,
you know, it's good, I suppose.
You got to make up your mind whether you're saying, do we need more? Yes, we always need more of everything. There are certain things that are provided. Is it enough? Is everything enough? Is ISSP big enough? Is the low-income housing big enough? No, it's never big enough because the need is giant. Absolutely agreed. There's one thing that is not done for anybody in this county, and that's the one thing that Community House was designed to accomplish. It's the only place where this service is provided, and it just may well be one of the most valuable, most important services of all.
And that service
takes people to take people who want to go from homelessness to something else and assist them in the process in every area, not just housing, but training, job training, education, support in every area of their life, medical, dental, you name it, and provides them safety and security for a period of time, helps them find a job, helps them train for a job, helps them get connected to the community, helps them in every way, shape, or form so that at the end of this program, they're not homeless anymore. It doesn't feed them for the night. It doesn't put them in low-income housing where their neighbors are doing whatever. It doesn't just go here, blot, and throw money at them and do nothing.
Right.
It actually works in a careful, caring, consistent way to take people from that situation and provide for them the opportunities to get out of that situation forever. Not for a week, not for an hour, not for a day, for the rest of their lives. Now, I'm sorry, but I can't think, gee, that's a waste of time. It's not provided in any other area in this whole county. I'm like you. I'm tired of throwing money at people that doesn't help them. Which prevents them for a day or an hour from being cold or whatever. Yes, that has to happen, and yes, I'm glad that it happened.
No, it isn't happening. I'm sorry. It isn't happening because CCH closed its campground. It is not happening at the moment. It's happening for a total of what? 32 people in the ISSP program right now. That's what's happening right now. But let's go ahead.
And maybe there are a lot of things.
Less than 100 beds.
There are a lot of things happening in this county, and a lot of programs available.
There's a lot more not happening in this county and a lot more that's been closed down.
There's only one. I mean, this whole county set about doing the best they could with the professionals and
people from the homeless.
You have a lot of confidence in this county, don't you? I mean,
well, from what I've seen, I've been pretty impressed. Really? I've been in lots of counties, partner, and this county spends more money and more effort on this issue than any place I've ever been. And maybe that's not every place, and I haven't been to the places in New York, that in Chicago and Boston that are supposed to be, you know, places where this is really done well. I haven't been to those. But I've lived in a lot of cities and a lot of countries in the world, and this city is doing more than any of them I've ever been in. Now, are they doing it perfect? No, there's no such thing. I mean, you know.
See, that kind of statement just, it's a complete distortion of what's going on in the city of Santa Cruz to me. I mean,
how much money is spent in this city for the homeless in a year?
For the homeless, meaning what?
I ask you the question. You don't know.
I have no idea how much they're throwing at the homeless in terms of paying a bunch of social service providers.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, you can pay money at middle-class people
when
on
I
salaries.
Eat a meal and
you can
have a safe place to sleep.
What is that worth? What percentage of the homeless is being served by the money that is being thrown, however much it is, at them? Okay. I'd say less than 5%. Less than 10% of the homeless in this city.
You think so? Seriously?
There is a legal place to sleep? Yes. No question. In terms of legal places to sleep, no question. Less than 5% of the homeless people in this city have a legal place to sleep at night. Less than 5%. If that's a wonderful record, if that's
not perfect,
I'll tell you. That's your rhetoric is it's flowing over the table under the floor. You know, I mean, you know, you got to really. I mean, you're a good salesman, Frank, but it's hard to sell, you know, ice to the Eskimos here.
It's difficult for me to agree with you and say, yes, more needs to be done, and it's being done in certain areas.
Something needs to be done for 95% of the people at night.
Okay, and
not,
the 5%
not more
don't
needs
matter.
To be done.
If I accept your figures, they don't matter. To hell with them. They don't
5%,
count.
No, the 5% do
the
matter.
The people who work with them
but,
don't
but,
count.
But if...
The money that's spent on them doesn't matter.
If the people who are served...
The energy of thousands of people in the... You get to rant and rave. Give me a chance.
Okay. I thought I was giving you a chance.
Yeah, you were talking.
Well,
I didn't talk while you were ranting.
I haven't finished ranting.
So shut up.
Let me rant a little.
You ran a great... You're a great ranter.
You gotta go?
Okay.
Well, can you give me a ride back when you were
there? Sure.
Okay, that's good.
See,
are you near the downtown? Can you get a...
Sure,
we're going to have to do some more ranting later.
Okay.
It's been fun ranting with you.
And that was... And that was a candid interview with Frank Puselek, who's the, I guess, operations manager of the Community House Project for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, or the Trailers Not Trolls Project, as I dub it. Friendly guy, outgoing, ready to swap arguments with you. I much enjoyed talking to him, and who knows, it may be as a sort of a new, fresh figure, and as one who sounds like he has some integrity and certainly some spirit to throw some new light on this issue and to open up the dialogue to the critics. At least certainly opened up the dialogue to myself and Becky Johnson. The radio station that frequently gives me time is KKUP, actually not that frequently, once or twice every few months. A man named Purusha Obuda, who's a civil rights activist, who has a twice weekly show, gives me a call and asks me about the homeless update in Santa Cruz. So I decided to do him one better tonight and ask him about the homeless update in Palo Alto. This is the result.
Purusha, I'm talking on the line to Purusha, give me your last name again.
Obluda.
Obluda, and Purusha, you are a commentator on KKUP, a civil rights activist in the Palo Alto community, and unfortunately a man has been talking to a tape recorder that hasn't been going for the last 15 minutes, so I'm going to summarize what you said and pick it up from there. You've been talking to me about how the small community, the pretty sizable community of Palo Alto, 55,000 people, has only about 150 homeless people, doesn't have a law against sleeping outside, but does have a law barring people from sleeping in the parks. But of late, there has been increasing expenditures for police patrols, and only $40,000 and all of that federal money goes to any expenditures to deal with homeless services. Anything else you said that you remember that I haven't covered? I apologize to you and to our audience. I, this tape recorder went on voice activated, and your voice is so soft it just didn't activate it.
Okay, well, yes, I think you got it down fine.
But we are on tape now, so go ahead.
The one last thing I might suggest is that on the 17th of June, Monday night at 7 o'clock, the City Council will be considering the police expenditure of $217,000 and will be considering ordinances that would prevent sitting or lying down on the sidewalk in the downtown area. Now, do you have in Santa Cruz a similar ordinance?
We do, and it's an interesting history to it. I believe it's similar to the ordinances they attempted to pass in San Francisco and failed, were successful in passing in Berkeley, but those ordinances were enjoined by federal district court Judge Claudia Wilkin. That's Proposition O in Berkeley, now on hold, thanks to that federal judge. And were also passed in Seattle, and unfortunately, those laws have been upheld by a federal district. It may be a court of appeals. Not sure if it's that high up there. Our ordinances, the downtown ordinances you and I discussed at some length back in 1994 when we were both concerned about Scott Kennedy and trying to do some kind of counter-organizing around Kennedy and the Resource Center for Nonviolence's 100th anniversary of Gandhi.
125th, actually.
125th.
Yeah.
Thank you, yeah. And at that time, eventually we arranged a debate between myself and Kennedy and Keith McHenry. And as I told you, not only has Kennedy gotten much worse, he's gotten almost personally vengeful about this. He showed up this afternoon, as I told you. Not only did he vote a month ago, 5-2, to set up an injunction against essentially the free speech rights of homeless protesters in front of City Hall, He not only did he tear down a sign himself 2 days ago, but today he actually, when we criticized him as he walked past, he walked up, looked at the sign we had, and said, "I'm calling the police to have this sign removed."
Well, there goes the old Constitution out the window, Robert.
Yeah. But the answer to your question...
In essence, does this mean that Santa Cruz is not enforcing laws against sitting on the sidewalk?
Well, the actual sitting on the sidewalk law has... a brief history. It was the police practice, of course, has always been to selectively harass and ticket and take to court those they don't want on the sidewalk for one reason or another.
Get the ones with the guitars.
The ones with the guitars they don't like, or the protesters who are there for a long period of time. Wanton Dave Jacobs was a prime example of this. He's an old-time protester no longer in town, who I think amassed the greatest number of sort of tickets for sleeping and sitting and so forth that anyone ever did. He was a very articulate ex-vet who showed up in right after the Iraqi genocide and did a 4.5-month vigil at the town clock. So successful, the city council, at that time with Scott Kennedy dissenting, turned the town clock into a park with closing hours in order to get rid of the protest. This is something, by the way, they're now planning to do at City Hall to get rid of the protest there. They're going to turn it into a park with closing hours. That's their plan, to do it with an emergency piece of legislation next Tuesday night. And I'm going to invite all your audience, all my audience, and you're on my show this time, to come on down on Tuesday, June 11th, to the City Hall at 6:30 at Santa Cruz, which is at 809 Center Street, and be prepared to serve food, eat food, and we don't know if they're going to attempt to arrest people for serving food because it's illegal to, quote, cook, prepare, or store food under the new Kennedy-concocted injunction. But the answer to your question about the sitting laws, in 1994, the Kennedy Council, Kennedy was then mayor, passed unanimously a set of six laws, a six-pack of vicious laws, which were anti-homeless laws, and one of those was a ban against sitting on any sidewalks downtown or at the boardwalk or in any commercial district. There are actually three or four different districts covered. It wasn't a citywide ban. It didn't cover residential areas, for instance, but it did cover most, almost all commercial areas, if not all commercial areas. The ban provoked a lot of protest, but the protest really didn't take off until a month after the law, well, 2 weeks after the law went into force, when the protesters, the ordinary meal, which Food Not Bombs does on the Cathcart and Pacific and still does downtown in Santa Cruz, was raided by the police, who started arresting people for sitting down eating food. They didn't arrest them. They gave them citations. told them to move, and people, then Futuna Bonds people were enraged and sat down with them, and I think they took a number of people to jail. The next weekend, there were hundreds of people at that corner. It was an amazing thing. We had formed a group called the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty several weeks before, and it wasn't really off the ground. There was a lot of talk of compromise and so forth and so on. But at this point, we had literally hundreds of people. We sat down. They arrested 50 people for sitting on the sidewalk. They gave up, and they tried to leave. It was the first time I ever saw the police try to leave the scene. They had spent 2.5 hours literally just having a whole armed phalanx of police. I think it was 40 police in a triangular formation guarding a bit of sidewalk against what? Against nothing. We could never figure out what it was. And when they left, they broke the ribs of one person. One woman who was struck, who was pregnant, who later had a miscarriage. There was a series of police beatings. Later that day, some youths broke a window or two in the area, a window or four, actually, and the police declared us a riot zone, and they were sort of arresting people. No convictions came out of any of those arrests. There were two jury trials, and both a woman named Marlena and another woman named Kim Argula were both found innocent. The sitting law under which all the people were arrested was thrown out as unconstitutional by two local judges in a very unusual decision. Local judges are usually not interested at all in overturning those kinds of laws. They ruled that the warning provision of that law made it illegal. It meant that the police officer could selectively decide who he would ticket. They decided it was open to selective enforcement. And the city council went back to its books, led by Scott Kennedy and Michael Rotkin, who is now our mayor. And in the summer of 94, almost before it was thrown out, about the same time it was thrown out, they passed a modified sitting ban, which made it illegal to sit 10 feet from a shop, 4 feet from a telephone booth, or 50 feet from an ATM. And that law was found constitutional, and the individual which can challenge that law, his name is Eric Marcus, I think the case is still in the appeals courts, working its way up. The law is not very much enforced, although people are told to move on and threatened, and they usually do. We don't have an active, well-organized protest movement doing that, and it's one of my grievances, one of my disappointments, that the protest that's now in its 97th day, 96th, 98th day, actually, at City Hall today, protesting the sleeping laws, doesn't move down onto the mall and at the same time challenge the sitting laws, because the mall has hundreds and hundreds of people, while City Hall, which is only 2 blocks away, has only about a dozen. You don't see much happening at City Hall.
Interestingly enough, Hudnot Bombs in Palo Alto went through a similar situation. We began to give meals out at the City Hall, and we were determined ahead of time we would not ask for permits or permission.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, it became apparent that the city officials weren't seeing us as they left at the end of the day. We were feeding at 5 o'clock in hopes that the city mothers and fathers would see outside their window that there were hungry people. They go get in the elevators, go to the garage, get in their cars, and drive away. So we moved downtown to University, where, as you say, there are a lot more people, and have given out food every Sunday and Wednesday at 6 ever since.
Any problems with the cops?
No, they've been... Palo Alto is made up of very intelligent liberals, and they have better sense than to give trouble where they don't need to give any. But they're going down a different path right now. They're going to follow behind San Francisco, Santa Cruz, and some of the other so-called liberal bastions that have gone the wrong way, I think.
You know, when I read the story in the San Francisco Chronicle about instance outside, what was it, Pete's Coffee or Noah's Bagels or whatever the hell it was, about the
Noah's Bagels
panhandler who allegedly attacked a city council member, and then I got a totally different story from the Stanford Homelessness Action Coalition in early May when I visited them. I called up Noah's Bagels to see if I could get some information. I got a woman who was friends with a local street person who gave me a completely different story, that in essence what was happening is it was some sort of internal dispute between two street people, one of whom worked at the cafe and one helped out, and the other whom was sort of an eccentric street artist. And I got a kind of a totally different story, but what it eventually boiled down to, again, was a form of street people getting the shaft because they're on the streets with their possessions, and they're, you know, essentially treated as not much better than garbage.
You got a minute to hear a third version?
Tell me the third version.
Okay, I don't know if mine is any more accurate than either of those, and it, I have not talked to the person who was arrested. I have talked to the other person who was involved with him, mm-hmm. and have heard the stories from the city officials.
Mm-hmm.
A man named Larry, I won't even get into his last name,
mm-hmm.
As soon as I had heard a description of his behavior, I told the person who was telling me this, he suffers from manic depressive illness. He's bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, I think you're right. I said, I can tell because what he had done is gather together a bunch of little odds and ends in a kind of pack rat fashion and formed them into what he regarded as a work of art of some sort,
mm-hmm.
that had a social meaning. He was setting it up to show people something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that very moment, the chief of police, the city attorney, the city manager, and three members of the city council were going out to be shown how bad the situation was on the streets.
What an opportunity for a Serbian sniper.
Right. They walked right down to Noah's Bagel Shop and arrived just as two street people were having an argument. The one who wanted his stuff to stay up and the one who thought it was trash. The city council people got right into it. One of them grabbed the stuff and threw it in the wastebasket. This infuriated the person who I believe is suffering from an attack at the high end of a manic depressive cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And he apparently grabbed a councilwoman by the shoulders and moved her a few feet, a foot or two to the side.
Mm-hmm.
He did not show up for his arraignment. He was caught in an office, sitting in an office later, trashing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my experience that people suffering from that disease at the high end are not genuinely in control of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
He's been caught doing similar things, thrown into jail and treated as a criminal two or three times in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid it'll happen to him again. That's how we treat a great many of the 1% of the people in this country who suffer from this terrible disease.
Mm-hmm.
They're hard to deal with. We throw them in jail and we drug them with heavy-duty psychotropic drugs very frequently without a psychiatrist ever actually seeing them or talking to them. So that's my version of what happened. It's kind of our Tonkin Gulf incident. I discover nowadays nobody knows what that means.
It means it's a provocative instance that's being used to justify a huge, massive overreaction.
Exactly. Exactly. And unfortunately, Councilwoman Schneider, who had been decent about her position before, suddenly is very upset, and I understand why. And she got touched and moved, and she is among those pushing very hard to make it illegal to sit on the sidewalk.
That's ironic. Kennedy seems to be not quite in the same bag, but he used to claim that he opposed the sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz. That's Scott Kennedy, our council member. And he has, as recently as a month ago or a month and a half ago at a demonstration, he insisted on telling the demonstrators he still opposed the sleeping ban here. But he has refused to bring it up for any kind of a public vote. He, as I said, was one of the five votes in favor of this injunction against the protest against the sleeping ban. And the injunction, I want to clarify, does not ban the protest entirely. It bans sleeping at the protest. It makes one act of sleeping punishable by up to 6 months in jail. But this thing you tell me about Larry and the upcoming anti-homeless laws in Palo Alto is very interesting. I understand Santa Clara passed what is law against using signs to panhandle, something like that?
Yes. That's one that happens in a lot of places. They're using the excuse of not wanting public transportation or public movement on the streets to be interfered with in any way. Now, the one in Palo Alto is particularly outrageous because the finance committee, the night that I went to speak against their putting up $217,000, announced that a great many of the
$217,000
for police to protect against blocking the sidewalks,
mm-hmm.
they admitted that the cafes and various other businesses that are putting sidewalk tables and chairs out there have by and large not been paying the fees they're supposed to pay to do this. There are dozens of businesses in Palo Alto that are years behind in paying their fee for which they're allowed to block the sidewalk. Their customers who have money are allowed to sit there and block our sidewalk, but if you have none, you had better not sit there with a sign that says that you're being threatened with starvation and need help, or you'll go off to jail for it.
Mm-hmm. Santa Cruz, by the way, you are allowed to hold a sign on the sidewalk. Signs are exempt from the anti-panhandling laws, but if you peacefully ask for spare change from a sitting position at any time, the first such offense is an infraction, punishable $162 fine. The second one, within a month, is punishable by up to 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine. Not that that law has ever been enforced per se, but those are the penalties on the books for peacefully asking for spare change. This law is supported by Kennedy and Rodkin and other council members, Matthews and Yokoyama and a host of others, even some liberals. So we are, you know, we have this, we have a really, well, we are the future you do not want to get into here in Santa Cruz. Although Santa Cruz is a much larger population of counterculture people, I guess, in a certain sense, and that we have, I estimate our homeless population at 500 to 1,500, for example, which is significantly larger than the 150 you spoke of for Palo Alto.
I think that the number is so small in Palo Alto because the police, though they have not been brutal, have been quite efficient in keeping people out of sight. And since the spending of the big extra money to put more cops there, we find that we're feeding fewer people at Food Not Bombs. They just disappear. They're afraid to come up into the downtown section and get the food that they need to stay alive for fear that they're going to get one of those citations.
Mm-hmm.
And the police, I talked to one Vietnam veteran who told me that in the first 14 days of the crackdown, he was searched 12 times, everything short of a body cavity search, serious searches, 12 times in 14 days.
Sounds like a Matrix program. This was all in the last month?
This is, yes, within the last month.
Wow, this is interesting because while San Francisco has not let up on its anti-homeless laws, in spite of Willie Brown's new administration, we find that the stats are still very bad about sleeping arrests. And indeed, there's police patrols in the parks that weren't there before. Nonetheless, as you probably know, Terrence Hallinan, district attorney, has dismissed 38,000 Matrix offenses that had been pressed under Jordan, and we're setting up warrants for all these people for such crimes as sitting and having a backpack in the park and sleeping.
Well, you may turn out to be the only person in the history of San Francisco to be sent to jail for giving food to people.
I hope I am the only one.
That would be quite an honor. I was honored merely to be arrested for that and to be released immediately and have the charge dismissed. That happened to everybody else but you, essentially, didn't it?
It did, and it's interesting because there actually are two food heroes, we might call them, who were arrested and convicted in Santa Cruz, which has the distinction, dubious as it may be, of being the first city I've ever heard of to convict by jury trial people for serving free food to the homeless. And those people were Sandra Loringer and Brian Flanagan Staley back in 1989 when we headed a group called SWAP, Soup Without a Permit, and Food Not Bombs from San Francisco, which was then sort of a fledgling organization, came down and helped us. We were fighting to essentially alert the city to the presence of troll busters and anti-homeless laws, and the mayor, Marty Wormhout, who's now our supervisor, was determined that this would not upset the shopping Christmas season and sent the police in to move us out. And we had a food war that lasted 6 months. And as I said, two people were convicted and sent to jail. Scores were arrested. We went through courts, and eventually, however, we forced them to set up a free meal funded by the city and Food Not Bombs and another group called Feed the People here in Santa Cruz feeds nightly on the street. We actually have a meal every night on the main street in Santa Cruz to the dismay of the merchants, and they're trying to do something about this sort of in backhanded ways, but they don't want to attack it frontally because attacks on Food Not Bombs and Feed the People lead to mass demonstrations in this area, and that's something that they dare not provoke. What they're trying to do is get rid of this demonstration at City Hall through sort of this very draconian injunction, which they're hoping will simply stifle it in its crib and then without a lot of public brouhaha. We're hoping, on the other hand, or at least I'm hoping, to see that it somehow could be moved into a more public area. And so every arrest, every act of harassment becomes the basis for more publicity, which is what we really need to do. I don't know if you can do that in Palo Alto. It's really hard when homeless people are picked off one by one. And we've also had a resurgence down here of troll busting. I had the head of the Homeless Community Resource Center, Karen Gillette, give me a call yesterday or the day before. She and I are, we've been speaking for the last 6 months, but in the past we really have been hostile because I've regarded her as being against the rights of protesters and the homeless and on the city payroll and sort of a poverty pimp. Our relations have improved. She's adopted a more neutral stance. We've been exchanging information. And she called me and said, there are people on the levee, there are young kids who are walking around with baseball bats beating up homeless drunks, smashing them in the face. And I have independent confirmation of that from people down at the vigil. So this cycle of hostility toward the homeless, of violence, similar to the violence against blacks in the South or Hispanics or Asians in the big cities, is something I think is furthered by the kinds of anti-homeless statements made by Mike Rotkin, the kinds of anti-homeless actions, tearing down protest signs done by Scott Kennedy, the entire set of anti-homeless laws, which masquerade as laws for public order and security that seem to be heading your way in Palo Alto like they're sitting on the sidewalk.
Yes, unfortunately, everything that you say is very accurate, and yes, it does look to me like we're in for a long battle, and that this seems to be a time when the various chambers of commerce and business interests are really pressing very hard once again. It comes in little waves, it seems. I don't quite understand how or why, but it does seem to be that way right now.
We're talking about a federal injunction against the anti-homeless sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz, and possibly against police practices which target homeless people. Do you have any legal support in your community, Palo Alto, for any kind of similar suit or even just individual small claims court lawsuits against police actions that cause homeless people to lose their property or suffer other injuries? In San Francisco, they've done a little of that with the Coalition on Homelessness.
Well, Robert, I got appointed somehow, I don't quite know how, to the Palo Alto Task Force on Homelessness. And there are 10 of us who are meeting every other week. And
how can you be reached? You've got a phone number?
It's part of the Human Relations Commission in Palo Alto. You just call the Human Relations Commission and tell them you want to talk to somebody at the task force or talk about it or find out about it. It's held every other Thursday at the first at the United Methodist Church on Hamilton at 7, and everybody's welcome to come and put their 2 cents worth in. We have a lengthy public input. And of the 10, it looks to me like eight or nine are